From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. La Crosse's annual Great River Folk Festival is just a week away. This year's festival opens on Friday, August 22nd, and continues through Sunday the 24th. 3 days of concerts, music workshops, arts, and other exhibitions showcasing original music, crafts, and related folk arts. The festival features guest artists as well as regional musicians and crafters, and has been for nearly 40 years. Well, somewhat coincidentally, Newsmakers this year is recognizing its 40th anniversary year, and as we were combing through the archives, we rediscovered a 1977 Newsmakers with the late Pete Seeger, who passed away earlier this year. He met with members of the La Crosse media on the occasion of his appearance at the 1977 Great River Traditional Music and Crafts Festival. So on the occasion of next week's festival, we found it timely to share these insights, commentary, and even a bit of impromptu music with Pete Seeger.
Okay, as you're hearing in the background, we have a special guest with us today, and the man's name is Pete Seeger. Pete, the media of the La Crosse area.
What can I tell you you don't know already?
Well, I guess over the past 20 years, Mr. Seeger, a lot of your repertoire has been in connection with protest songs.
I'd say over the last 40 years.
Over the last 40 years, all right.
Why stop at 40?
Why this motivation towards protest songs?
Well, I come from a long line of New England Protestants. And they sang Protestant hymns 300 years ago. And when I was a kid, I was infected with the idea that the world wasn't just meant to enjoy, but the world was in a kind of a bad state and you ought to pitch in and try and do something about it. Whether it was litter on the highway, or someone being lynched, or an unnecessary war. Oh, you name it. So as a teenager, I got involved, and I've been involved ever since. On the other hand, I don't look upon protest as a narrow thing. After all, the lover singing an unrequited love song, he's protesting unrequition, right?
Talk about motivation as a teenager. Most people go through that period when they're a teenager, in their early 20s, but most people drift out of it. What kept you going?
Well, I guess because it wasn't just a matter of hormones, but the fact that I did an awful lot of reading. That's my dissipation. Some people drink too much, others smoke too much, I read too much. And if I find myself in a room with some books, I can't keep my hands off them. I just have to read them. So, as a kid, I read all the books of Ernest Thompson Seton. Anybody ever hear of him? Wrote nature stories, Wild Animals I Have Known. So he also thought that American Indians had the best society he knew of. They had no stealing, literally no crime as we know it, no poverty as we know it. If there was food, the whole tribe ate. If there was no food, the whole tribe starved. But the idea of having one person having a lot of money here, and next door somebody who didn't have much money, that was unknown to them. It seemed immoral. I read that as a kid. Later on in the 1930s, when the CIO came along, I started reading all sorts of political and labor union literature. And I've kept on reading since then. I now realize, of course, that words are treacherous. Alfred North Whitehead, the old philosopher, once said, strive for simplicity, but learn to mistrust it. And every word is, after all, a little piece of oversimplification, right?
What you're doing, your songs, are they making a difference?
If I didn't believe they made a difference, I guess I wouldn't bother singing them, but I have absolutely no proof, except that some people try and keep the songs off the air, so they must think they make a difference. I don't know, if you ever hear a song called Waist Deep in the Big Muddy? Back in 1967, I had a little phrase running in the back of my mind, waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. I said, gee, I could make a song. I'm not a good songwriter. I so envy people like Bob Dylan that can turn out song after song. It took me a month or more of hard head scratching until I finally had a song, and I knew it was a good song. Everywhere I sang it, people cheered and stomped, and even people who disagreed with it found themselves laughing. That's the aim of a good songwriter. Even when someone disagrees with you, they can't help laughing. And I even made a record of it. But the record company sales department said, oh, don't be foolish. No radio station is going to play this, and they didn't. But the Smothers Brothers had a TV show, which was on the top back in 1967, and the CBS executive said, "What can we do for you? We're riding high." And he said, "Let us put Seeger on." Mm. Well, finally they said, "Okay, he can go on." And in October of 67, went on, and I recorded this, put this song on the tape along with some other ones. And the tape got to New York, they scissored the song out of the tape. The Smothers Brothers were quite shrewd. They took their complaint to the press. They said, if you can't lick them on TV, lick them in the pages. And they complained in the press that CBS was censoring their best comedy. CBS was censoring Seeger's best songs. Finally, in January, after they made some mileage out of the publicity, I guess, CBS says, okay, you can sing the song. And in January, I sung the song on the air and sang for 7 million people. What more could a musician want? Gee, if I never sang again in my life, I'd be luckier than most musicians. I reached 7 million people with one song. I don't say it did everything. It was one more little indication of how the American people felt about the war in Vietnam. It didn't mention Vietnam by name. It was actually an allegory told of something that happened way back 30, 40 years ago. It was back in 1942, there was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river, that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. I usually play it with a guitar, it gets more oomph out of it. Song didn't mention President Johnson by name either, but that was the inference they made, and it wasn't too polite. And maybe this was one more little grain of sand fill in the basket which tipped the seesaw, and Johnson a month later decided not to run for re-election. So you never can tell what a song does. You really can't. I know in my own personal life, songs have changed my life, changed my way of thinking. I've gotten insight. You know, there's many ways you can learn about the world. You can learn from adding up numbers. Scientists like to do that. You can learn by actually seeing something. That's maybe best of all. Proof of the pudding is in the eating. One picture is worth 1,000 words. But sometimes you hear a little story, and that story starts you thinking, and the wheels in your brain start turning and changes your... Let's change my way of thinking.
The music isn't all aimed at making us think, though, because the music is such an emotional thing of itself, too.
That's right. It's hard to put down in words, maybe impossible, what music does to you. It does communicate something, but what it communicates you can't say in words. You can try. My father, who's an old musicologist, I just returned from a seminar he was giving in California. He's 90 years old. He says, think of the truth as a rabbit in a bramble patch, and you can't reach it. All you can do is circle around it from different sides and kind of think at least somewhere in there.
With crafts festivals and stuff like this that's going on tomorrow that we're taking part in and all, do you find more people into making their own music?
Oh, it's all over the country. I feel very proud that I'm one link in a long chain that has encouraged people to make their own music, not simply listen to it over a loudspeaker. And there are hundreds of thousands of guitars being sold every year, not to people who think they're going to make a living at it, but people who simply want to make their own music. And a lot of them like to make up songs. Now, here's where we learned from this fellow, Woody Guthrie. When someone, I tell people, try writing a song. They say, well, gee, how do you do it? I say, learn from Woody. Swipe an old tune. Woody wrote 1,000 songs way back between 1935 and 1950 when he went into the hospital. And his most common technique was to take an old tune. My little darling, how I love you. Well, you know what it turned into. This land is your land. This land is my land. And Woody never really thought much of the commercial music business. He thought of Tin Pan Alley the way an Oklahoma farmer thinks of Wall Street. It's just a bottleneck in the body politic. So Woody would make up his songs wherever he was for whoever would listen to him. And it's only since he's been dead, really, that his songs have really crisscrossed the country, and they're all over now.
What do you think of the commercial music market?
Some of the greatest songs in the world come out of very commercial situations. I mean, I can hardly think of some better songs than have come out of Tin Pan Alley, whether it's those songs of Duke Ellington or Cole Porter, or if you want to go back, Stephen Foster's songs. They were pop songs. Come from Alabama. Greensleeves was a pop song. No fooling. It was a song of the marketplace. You see, look at it. The fine arts music was the symphony orchestra playing in the Duke's castle. The folk song was the peasants out making their own music because they couldn't afford to have anybody play for them. But the pop song was played in the marketplace. And Greensleeves is 300 or 400 years old, but it was first a pop song. Now, it's entered the folk tradition, granted, but it's there's not a sharp line between these different things. Trouble is, though, if you only make music because you're getting paid for it, there's going to be an awful lot of junk turned out. You know that as well as I do.
From the archives, you're listening to a 1977 Newsmakers appearance by the late Pete Seeger. He was in La Crosse as a guest at that year's Great River Traditional Music and Crafts Festival, and he's on the air with us today on the occasion of next week's annual Great River Folk Festival taking place in La Crosse.
With all the songs you play around the country all over, and do you have a favorite? Maybe it's a song you sang.
No one favorite. I got, at any particular time, I've got some song that's on my brain, and I can't get it off. Unless I drive it out with another song. And there's songs I keep coming back to. Some of the songs I keep coming back to are very simple. Oh, Mary, don't you weep, don't you mourn. Oh, Mary, don't you weep, don't you mourn. Pharaoh's army got drowned. Oh, Mary, don't you weep. Now, this song is over 100 years old. Perhaps put together by people with chains around their legs. It's got very few words. It says the same few words over and over again with a few changes. God gave Noah the rainbow sign. No more water, fire next time. Pharaoh's army got drowned. Oh, Mary, don't you weep. Now, I look upon that song and as a basketball backboard. And you bounce the experiences of your life against it, and it bounces back meanings. What the song is itself is very simple. But when you think about it, it means many things. Now, the person who wrote it, I'm sure, wasn't thinking of atom bombs, but ever since 1945, that last verse is, that's what I think of. That you and I and our children, grandchildren, could be the last human beings on Earth if we don't solve the problem of what to do about atomic power. So I sing that song everywhere I go. Everywhere.
I was wondering, it seems that folk music is becoming more and more popular. We all want to know, we all want to learn songs about labor. We want to learn songs that maybe were sung in Wisconsin 100 years ago or whatever. Why do you think that is? It's all part of that.
Well, in a chaotic situation, perhaps we're all grasping for roots, all of us. And a little old song can throw a little light on where we came from. Tonight I'll be singing some of the songs came out of early days in this country. I'm an American history buff. My favorite book to read. I mean, you can read lots of kinds of books, but my favorite book is History of America. All the crazy things that have gone on here, and the inspiring things, too, as well as some of the horrifying things. Just last night I was reading of a lynching where a man was lynched, and then his wife screamed at the lynchers, and they said, well, we'll string you up, too, and they did. She was pregnant in her 9th month, and they took a knife and cut the baby out of her belly and stamped on it. You wonder, what kind of human beings do a thing like that? Can you call them Americans? Well, they live here. So we have all kinds of people in America. And I think you have to realize all the different sides of history. You can't gloss over and ignore the bad sides as well as you look at the good sides.
Folk music's been around for quite a long time. Do you see it more appropriate today? Not as appropriate as appropriate?
You know why I think it's appropriate today? Precisely because of this great machinery. You've got one of them in your hands right now. We have so much machinery that people say, you don't need to do anything. Just do your job and pay the money and sit back and we'll entertain you. Well, that's a way to death, I believe. The wonderful thing about America is the number of people who sometimes say, hold on, hold on, I know the machine can do this better than me, but I want to do something myself. And our country is full of do-it-yourselfers, whether it's skiers and skaters and swimmers and or fishermen or people who do some art or craft. There'll be a lot of craftspeople here at this festival. I hope that some of the people listening to this program will come around and see them. Glass blowers and potters and wood carvers and Lord knows what. Weavers, I guess. Painters. Jewelry makers. Our country is full of do-it-yourselfers, and I say hooray! The sad thing is that some people still haven't latched on to the fun of it. There's still some people, they're so exhausted, they get home and say, give me a beer. And the foolish, you know, the TV says to him, don't be witty, watch a professional wit. Don't have a well-conditioned body, watch a professional athlete. And most foolish husband and wife sitting back there like sticks of wood looking at the professional lover pretending to kiss another professional lover.
You waxed philosophical a while ago and mentioned that you are, in fact, a history buff. Might I ask you what you think was America's best chance at reaching what you see as the ideal for this nation?
If we are to reach our ideal as a nation, I'm convinced the whole world has to also reach it. I think it's an illusion that one part of this world can live in comfort and prosperity when there's a good many billion others on the verge of starvation. And we just can't seal ourselves off. Hitler tried to kill people that he didn't like, and it didn't work for him. It just built up the opposition to him. I made up a song. One blue sky above us, one ocean lapping all our shore, one earth so green and round, who could ask for more? I also had, some folks want to be like an ostrich, bury their heads in the sand. Then I said, some hope that plastic dreams can unclench all those greedy hands. Some want to take the easy way. Poisons, bombs, they think we need them. Don't you know you can't kill all the unbelievers? You really can't. You can kill a few of them, but you can't reach them all. There's no shortcut to freedom, is the way that song ends. And I think America has got a tremendous amount to contribute to this struggle that the entire human race is in to find a way to live together. It's not easy for the different stripes of the rainbow to coexist. We've got to. And one reason I think we can do it is that we're going through the hassles right now, busing and everything else. How do you have people of different opinions living next door to each other? One person has a loud hi-fi and the others wish silence. And it's going to take generations of arguing to work out the details of some of these things. But we've been working on it, perhaps longer than some other countries, so we have a head start on them. And I think also we've proven that not only do oil and water mix, matter of fact, we know that oil and vinegar make a fine salad dressing, and in the case of this banjo, Africa and Europe mix. This banjo is an African instrument, but the tunes I play are more often than not European. And the style of playing with this little fifth string up here is an African style. But worked out a combination. So here's a song which was sung by some Norwegians, came to America 130 years ago. Ole, ole, Hanna! Ole, ole, Hanna! Ole, 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 Hanna! So there you are. What I would like to persuade the politicians of the world is that not everybody has to sing the melody. Musicians have got a lot to teach the world. The fact you can mix things together, there's a time to be separate too. I know I like to hear some songs without any banjo at all. And I like to hear some straight rhythms without hearing a whole lot of harmony or melody with it. So there's time to be pure and a time to be impure, I guess.
Mr. Seeger, some of your songs are, a lot of your songs are about the working man. Have you worked at hard physical labor as Woody Guthrie did?
Well, Woody and me, because we're musicians, rarely stuck at one place for a long time. And I can't say that I ever had to do the normal 8 to 9 to 5 job. I had a job in the New York World's Fair of 39 picking up cigarette butts. And my wife sometimes kids me about it. She says, you don't know what it is to work. Well, of course, I was in the Army for 3.5 years. Took all the guff that the Army could make me. I graduated all of T5 at the end of 3.5 years. I was PFC after 2 years. So I did an awful lot of plain clothes order drill. I confess, I think that the hardest kind of work I know to do is sitting at a desk or standing at a workbench. I don't see how some people can take standing on their feet for 8 hours without walking around. I can do that. And I'm fortunate whenever I'm home, which is about 50% of the time, I can do a great deal of physical work. I heat my house entirely with wood, and I decided I like to chop so much. I am by choice a hewer of wood for a few hours every day. And that's when I feel best. When I feel worst is when I have to answer letters for 10 hours. And boy, I'm tied in knots there, all creaky. I don't see how secretaries manage to do it, sitting. I think it's cruel and unusual punishment.
If we wouldn't be breaking a secret or something you want to keep sacred, how old are you?
Oh, I'm 58, old enough to know better.
What do you want to be remembered for? I want to give you a death wish.
I don't need to be remembered at all. My family may remember me as someone who told stories. But I have lived long enough to know that some of my songs are going to keep on going for a long time. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago. I'm the luckiest musician I know.
Thank you, Pete Seeger.
Legendary folk singer Pete Seeger. He passed away in January of this year. We heard him in conversation with a panel of La Crosse news reporters on Newsmakers in 1977, just ahead of his appearance at that year's Great River Traditional Music and Crafts Festival. The moderator was Jack Marlowe. The late Pete Seeger's influences on folk music and its stories come to life through the music of many contemporary folk and acoustic musicians and songwriters, and you'll have a chance to experience their music and more at this year's Great River Folk Festival next weekend, August 22nd through 24th. This year at an all-new venue, for the first time in its 39-year history, this year's festival will be held on the banks of the Mississippi in La Crosse's Riverside Park. A wide variety of national and regional musicians will present several main stage concerts and workshops. Plus, there will be exhibits of arts, crafts, storytelling, dance, food, and more. Among this year's featured musicians are Tim O'Brien and Daryl Scott, Claudia Schmidt, Sally Rogers, Colin O'Brien, David Wilcox, Patchouli, bluesman Mike Munson, and entrants in the annual songwriting contest. Complete details are available online at greatriverfolkfest.org. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse as we continue to commemorate our 40th anniversary year. I'm John Gatto. Our production team includes Maureen McCollum, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to this year's Great River Folk Festival and other recent editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.